where people are potentially being exposed, their health is at risk. And that's the concern here in Rensselaer. People's health is at risk.
This is Dunedd Thayer of Game Theory, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, ICRA.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518- 622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael Gassman of Arlington, Virginia. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. Information is available at cdc.gov/COVID-19.
COVID warning.
Is that what's happening right now?
Add some interesting audio elements to the show right here.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to the Tingularity Radio Program, broadcasting live from the Palatial Administrative Offices of the Catskill Maker Syndicate, located at 65 West Bridge Street in the heart of Catskill. We are here to answer any science and technology questions you may happen to have. If anybody actually bothers to email us at catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com. And that's my intro. We are ready to go. To my left, I have Corey with me here tonight. Say hello.
Hello.
All right. Ben.
I'm way back here.
Ben.
Hey, how's it going?
That's no familiar. We got Cody.
Hello.
Hey, Cody.
I'm here.
And Cody brought a guest with us tonight.
Yes, I have a guest. His name is Christian Swenningson. Got that right? Right.
You did get it right.
And his radio call sign is
Kilo Delta 2, Lima, India, November.
There you go.
KD2LIN.
And if you couldn't tell by now, he is big into amateur radio. And I brought him here because
amateur radio, what's that?
We all like amateur radio.
Yeah, actually, what is that?
You know, actually, one of the reasons is a good question is that for many people, the first take on that is you're an actor.
Actor?
Yes. Radio drama.
Oh.
Well,
you're
that
a
sounds
ham.
Fun.
Not the one that I'm in. But,
people actually think that?
Yes.
Yeah. That's totally.
Seriously.
Oh, that's not what you do.
Wrong place. I'm sorry.
My whole set of here is wrong. Oh,
dang.
Oh man.
You're going to have to wing it.
Anyone.
No,
not in the 1930s.
We have at least one of us who has already begun experimenting with receiving ham radio transmissions and other amateur radio
I have a CD nice tall antenna, and I sit on a software-defined radio and plugged into my computer, and I just
watch it. So what bands do you listen to? What frequencies? Roughly.
All of them.
With SDR, you can't.
Okay, well, not my limit is 1.7 gigahertz maximum. Yeah. My minimum, thankfully, to an up converter I just added to the system is now zero. So I have been listening to shortwave bands lately, too. Mm-hmm. And most of my trouble is trying to figure out what kind of signals I'm seeing when I'm encountering data.
Yeah.
Starting to see, okay, obviously you got Morse code, but then there's like the PSK frequencies or encodings and stuff like that.
Yeah, many of them. And no easy way to, I'm actually not involved in that yet myself, the data side. Will be soon for the emergency communications work, but just learning to be able to tell from the sound what sort of encoding you might be encountering is a challenge in itself, because there are a lot of work being done on that.
Absolutely. I mean, there's some people trying to come up with the equivalent of Shazam for just signal identification software that will do it.
Oh, cool.
It still seems rudimentary, but somewhat effective.
Yeah.
You know what Shazam is?
Yeah.
Okay. So you also know.
Right.
Shazam
it took me a moment.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, I love it.
Not Kazam.
No, Kazam is the desktop recording software for Linux.
I thought that was a bad movie.
Oh, yeah, that too.
I thought it was where you downloaded music in the mid-2000s.
That's Kazaa, isn't
it? That was Kazaa.
No, Kazaa!
That's also defunct.
And
as far
I thought
as
it was Dell Comics.
So, you mentioned emergency radio, and part of the reason I thought this synchronized so well was that a friend told me about what you were doing in the general area of the Hudson Valley and Hawthorne Valley at the same time as Texas was getting swamped and, you know, their system was down. You know, people are dying. It's not a good scene there. So if you want to talk a little bit about what your workshops have been.
Yeah, I could start with some background. When I was in high school, I got really interested in amateur radio, though it was mostly about making stuff. And I didn't know how to make stuff, and I learned how to make stuff. And, built some kits, some hi-fi in those days. It was hi-fi. And then got interested in amateur radio, but as it happens, I loved the making stuff. But as I subscribed to QST, the main magazine in the hobby in the U.S., and I'd read about a lot of things and dreamed about doing stuff. And then it came down to, once you build the stuff and you learn how to use it, and then what do you actually do? I'm, especially then and most of my life, been an extreme introvert, right? Mm-hmm. So here's this introvert who can hardly have a conversation with a regular person, let alone, and you get on the radio and you have conversations with strangers. Well, at that time in my life, that was the end of it. But life moved on. I got involved in other things. I got involved in solar heating design and construction. Got back interested in the technology side as I was doing design work and building things and building relay control systems. At the time, the only digital we had was it wasn't digital. The only electronics was a relative temperature comparison to drive when to heat. But come along in life and noticing the many changes in the world and impacts and natural disasters. And I happened to be heading into the hardware store when I saw a sign for an amateur radio class. And what got me moving there was I have this natural technical bent, nerdy side and love to make stuff. And there are these natural disaster impacts going on and increasing in the world. And also, I've attend to economics and political things as well, and realize there's a lot of instability in the world and likely to be periodic disruptions of different sorts. So it seemed that emergency radio would be a good thing to have some capability, and the neighborhood needs it. I'm involved in quite a number of different small activist organizations of different sorts, from Time Bank that I helped found, to Zero Waste Group, to local river cleanups. And it just seemed there's a need in the community for emergency communication capability. I've got the kind of mind for that. Maybe I'll step up to the plate. So that's what I got into amateur radio, as it happens. Then I got involved with the club, and
which club is that?
It's actually called the Rip Van Winkle Amateur Radio Society.
What?
Because
what?
That is good.
Awesome.
When it started, the main people were here and in Columbia County. What's the bridge between the two communities? And so that was the name.
So you're named after the bridge, not the...
yes, not the sleepy guy.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Not the legend.
Okay.
Though our logo has Rip sleeping against a tree with a handheld radio and a big antenna.
Oh, perfect.
And the acronym is RV Wars. RVWARS.
Oh, that's all right.
Which can cause a great deal of confusion.
Yes, check yes, all the nerd boxes.
It is not Winnebago Destruction Derby.
That would be cool.
Although that's what you would expect in upstate New York.
Need a bigger arena. So that's the background in it. Then, interestingly, I've been in it 5 years. I've been very slow with developing the direct capability because I've been so involved with the club, and there's been a lot of social stuff going on, and also just developing different aspects of the club work. And it also happened to coincide with my getting involved with these other kinds of activist works.
Yeah.
Takes a lot of time, but you know, step at a time. I'm a slow, simple guy, but step at a time, you get somewhere. Yeah. I got involved with Medical Freedom People in Columbia County, and homeschooling group there.
What is Medical Freedom?
I know that show.
It's involved with free choice free medical choice.
It was
around vaccination.
Yeah, they formed, I believe, when New York decided to
shut everything down?
No,
way before.
Before that, when they voted to make it so that there were no more religious or other exemptions to having your child vaccinated, even if they're like homeschooled, right?
Oh, wow.
So there's a whole show about it.
It might have started before that particular thing. That was surely ramped it way up.
Yeah.
But even the part of requiring vaccination in order to be in school.
But how do they relate to amateur radio?
So this group is simply people who are a bit awake to conditions in the world. And part of the conditions in the world involve both more oppression and possible disruption around that, but also noticing climate change and disruption around that. And so it's the sense of greater and greater general instability and the likelihood of disruptions.
Right.
These people are not Armageddon oriented.
Okay. Yep. Well,
right?
That's good.
Well,
they're not
one whole
people.
Part of the world really is Armageddon oriented. That's not where this is, but just recognizing from a practical point of view the likelihood of different kinds of disruptions.
Yeah, what if you need help from your neighbor?
But
and
should
then,
an Armageddon occur, wouldn't they be useful?
They would be good to know.
Joe, you met my friend.
Really, your point about being able to get in touch with a neighbor is more what one thing that's been developing is a sense of neighborliness. And the people that you like to hang out with, that you have some fellow feeling for, and in our time, though we live so far apart, that communication really is a factor. And so more of this feeling of wanting to connect in different ways, and then a part of that is, of course, we connect a lot by internet and cell phone. And also then practical experiences of those going down. And what do you do then? You know, in our, in just a few months ago, I live in Stuyvesant, a few months ago, we lost half of our internet service when one tree fell down.
Oh, it hit the pole of doom.
Was it the pole of doom, sir?
The pole of doom. We had those.
Trying to puzzle that out, it had taken out power in a very limited part of the county and area, but it happened that one of those lines fed the main switching station for one of the ISPs.
Oh, that's bad.
And there went the internet.
They don't have a backup generator.
The backup Jenny, no.
Apparently, ups. You know, it was out.
Amateurs.
For, it was out for.
You have ups and backup Jennys, right, sir?
Yes, sir.
How many days can that backup Jenny run before?
As long as you keep feeding the diesel fuel indefinitely.
As long as you can. As long as you can get diesel fuel and can get it pumped out of the ground. And to you.
Is it fueled up? Is it automatic switch on?
Automatically switches on. So basically the second that we lose power, basically, you know, we have this massive diesel generator that just kicks on.
Where is this?
Germantown, New York. Yeah. I'm actually the network engineer over at GTEL. When we lose power, basically the giant diesel generator kicks on, kicks up the CO, and that will continue running indefinitely.
How long until, how long do you have to get to get there and refuel it?
When we
probably about like a day and a half.
That's,
oh my God.
That's great.
That's a lot.
It's a huge thing. I mean, it's like a giant truck engine. It's got like a 250 gallon tank under
that's
it.
That's still not so bad. Over 24 hours to respond.
I mean, it's.
And for reference, when LA went down with an earthquake, they had about a week before the tank went down and they almost missed their thing.
Oh, geez.
The network almost went down good.
You know, an interesting sidelight to that was that where I live, I can look across the Hudson River up on the hill, our two cell towers.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we had very little cell service, and that tower was not affected by the power outage.
Yeah.
Right? What was it affected by? It was affected by all these people who had lost their direct internet connection, trying to either make phone calls or get data through. So one of our members is fire chief, and where he is right near a section of I-90. So they serve that section of I-90. There was a major accident there some years back that they responded to. They actually had to shut down the eastbound lane of I-90, all the lanes, for half a day.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So here was this lineup, and they also were in view of a cell tower. Literally, there was no cell service.
Wow.
Why? Because everybody on the eastbound lane who was on the... was the westbound lane. The ones on the east side were having a call to make arrangements to let people know what's happening. Everybody going the other way was on their phones and on Waze, you know, shut down here. Everybody was using it, and it was totally overloaded and unusable. Same thing happened with the big Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. There was no cell service, not because they were all down. It was because they were overloaded. So that's when you need alternate forms of communication.
With the very thin traffic.
Laser beams.
No, I mean like very, very lean traffic, texting and other things like that, so you don't get jammed up. You don't fill
it with,
well, you
don't
see,
fill it with live video
no,
streams.
No, you see, this is the interview, but that's actually not the case with amateur radio.
Yeah.
Because we're not channelized.
Yeah.
Except on the there's only one band that's channelized in amateur radio, the 60 meter band. So that's not really an issue. You just dial over.
Dial over.
Yeah. Hmm.
But I mean, for say a resilient network, if you're setting up some kind of mesh node thing, you would probably limit that to.
Yes. Yes.
Needed communications.
Now we we looked into, we had somebody who joined the club who is a very high level network engineer lady who's done a lot of work and loves the mesh, has done that kind of work, and when we look at our environment over there, it doesn't much fit in. The mesh stuff is generally all high frequency that doesn't, very high frequency and ultra high, that doesn't work well making it through mountainous terrain. Mm.
Terrestrial
interference. Yep. But anyway, so the next step with that, though, so people said, I want you to present on ham radio. So I talked to a few of the people, and I soon could pick up that what they want to do is talk locally.
Yeah,
right.
Now, our club has three repeaters on three different bands up on a mountain, on top of a cell tower, tower now in Martindale, that serves Columbia County and over to here. We have a couple of members in Catskill. But that's, there is limited bandwidth,
mm-hmm.
very limited bandwidth.
So this is for ham radio.
For ham radio.
Which, I mean, that can make it way out.
Distance wise?
Sure.
With the repeater network, you can go very far.
So, a repeater system is a transceiver that operates on, that receives on one frequency, transmits on a nearby but different frequency, so it can use the same antenna. But all it does in itself, you mentioned network, which is one key, but the repeaters in itself simply rebroadcasts so that it extends the reach. Anybody, it's up in a great location. So it can pick up weak signals relatively and rebroadcast them from that great situation with a stronger signal. Radio to radio communication we call simplex in relation to repeaters. It's radio to radio instead of radio to repeater to radio. With simplex, on these very high and ultra high frequency bands, which is really WGXC is on the low end of the very high frequency band, right? You're at 90.7. Our low repeater is at 147, 210. So it's in that neighborhood.
Okay.
But that range is very limited. I can reach our repeater. You're typically with a repeater with a really good antenna and elevation, then you can get 25 miles. But the handheld simplex, you might be able to get 3 miles, depends on where you are. If you're up on a mountain, you got a big reach.
Mm-hmm.
You're downtown Hudson, you may not be able to reach the other end of Hudson.
I listen to hammers climb the mountain with their dipoles, and they're just
called soda. Summits on the air.
Uh-huh. I will hear, sometimes I hear them talk, but a lot of times I'll pick up the APRS tags coming across.
Yeah, that's their location tags.
Yeah, and that's cool because I use that to populate a map sometimes. On this
cool.
One, I have a program called Exaster, or I don't know, it starts with an X, X-A-S-T-I-R, and... it'll plot everybody's location on a geographic map of the region.
Yeah.
And I will get bounces out to a couple of states away on different repeaters. Mm-hmm. And the repeaters have to, like, you know.
So it's good that you brought that up because that's what you first mentioned. Repeater system is the next level. And that's what a cell tower is a repeater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the reason that it's called a cell system is because it's part of a network, and they send to another tower, and so make a network, and they send either by microwave or by fiber optics or telephone cables, anything to get to the next one, and then send it on. So there are some amateur radio, the N2ACF system around here, for instance, reaches, I don't know how far north they go, but they go down to Long Island.
Wow. I've gotten signals from Montreal.
Now, it's through one of the networks.
Sounds through one, at least one.
Perhaps that one.
I've actually monitored more than one standard, there's a standard APRS frequency for this region, and then for some reason I've noticed APRS signals coming in at like different side frequencies in that area. So I recorded them all, and my system looks for them.
Uh-huh.
So any of those systems with that, I'll catch. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't discriminate where it comes from. It just posts it on the map, like, oh, this person's here.
Yeah.
Oh, most of it, because I do the better weather for WGXC, is weather stations.
Uh-huh.
The weather stations that are tied into the system are specifically meant for that.
Yeah.
And my map will show their little meteorological symbol, wind speed, and all that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
As a backup in case I, yeah.
Wow, and that's tied really cool. in. You're able to tie that into the APRS tag,
yes.
So you get it populated directly.
Straight from those tags.
That's cool. There are. It's gotten very popular in the hobby that people, when they make contacts, there are some mapping systems, but you have to put in the location in that case, right?
And gotcha.
But it does then make a display where you can see these nice long hops.
Gotcha.
So it's fun. But coming back, there's a concern with repeater systems. They're wonderful. So I'm in addition to RVWARS, I'm in the Columbia County ARES, which is Amateur Radio Emergency Services.
Ah.
So we're dedicated to providing radio communications during emergencies. We work for that. And we, the club owns those repeaters. We're associated with the club. I'm in both. I'm the secretary of the club, produce the newsletter, and I'm the assistant emergency coordinator for the ARES and their public information officer. So there's this tie. We use the club's repeaters in emergencies.
Ah, okay.
But remember, not only is it low bandwidth, It's one conversation at a time.
Yeah.
It's one.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right? Speak, respond. Speak, respond. So when we're doing an exercise, or if we were actually deploying, we use all three repeaters. We use the one as net control. Then the people who are out in the field, when they want to contact somebody, they call into net control and say, I need to reach so-and-so. Mm. Net control says, go to the 220 machine.
Old
or go to the
140.
It's awesome.
It is. But, the thing is that we use three repeaters, one for net control, two for communications, but that's so that you have two conversation possibilities.
Right.
So, there's
wow.
We're moving to digital for that operation, mostly so that you can transmit more data. You can do a whole form coming from a hospital needing a lot of equipment and know that you're getting 100% accuracy.
Nice.
In a brief
time. Is there
time.
An error correction? Like, you can be certain of...
Very serious error correction.
Nice.
It's really remarkable. The people who've done that were... You'd be fascinated by the weak signal work. This is where this came from. And error correction is what it's all about.
Oh, yep. Great.
Very cool stuff. But then, it means that if there's anything intense going on, those repeaters are in use by our group, and they're not available to anybody else because they're in use.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense during an emergency.
Sure.
Yeah.
Unless some client
emergency
steps
services.
On the signal.
That's another problem. But also, if we have backup on that system, so we don't, we have a generator available, but we've got a good solar system and a good set of backup batteries, and basically the on the batteries alone we can go for 3 days, and that's without any input from the solar. For basically we're covered on that end of it for emergencies. But again, that's within this narrow three-channel system. So anybody else who needs to communicate needs another way to communicate.
Yeah.
And remember that with the these upper frequencies, range is limited and geographic interference is a problem.
Can you go to lower frequencies and just bounce it off the ionosphere, I guess?
So this gets very interesting, because that's the core, that picture is the core of the general concept of amateur radio. Mm-hmm. It's distance communication. And as you say, important concept, the ionosphere refracts the signal, and so you can reach out beyond what's called sky wave and ground wave, the local stuff.
I'm going to have to just stop you for a second. We're going to do a station ID, and you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXE, Catskill Hudson Acre, radio for open ears. And I'm going to forego the break song and just keep on rolling, because it seems to keep going good.
Going good.
Sorry.
Okay. So it's that picture of the ionosphere, which is a charged layer in the upper atmosphere, which refracts radio waves within certain frequency ranges. And that actually is seriously affected by especially the sun, right? So the characteristics of that ionosphere change completely through the day and night.
And that's why I can only hear Japan at nighttime.
And why in the old days of AM, you know, you start picking up tremendously distant stations in the middle of the night.
Right? I mark down the stations I hear, even the AM stations, and I have places like Miami, Charleston.
Yeah,
I've gotten out Cleveland. Like I can hear other states, no problem, on just an AM radio.
Right.
I also have a 150-foot wire long antenna in my backyard. That helps.
Yeah, great. So the situation with the ionosphere is that it is, as you move up in frequencies, it gets more transparent.
Right.
So the signals go right on through it instead of, we speak of it as bouncing off.
Yeah,
and that's great for satellite communication.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. So the typical, the long distance stuff is bouncing off the ionosphere, and then it can bounce off the Earth, back off the, up to the ionosphere, and back again, and you can get several hops to get distances all around.
How many hops can you average?
You know, I couldn't. I know that. Well, average is one thing, and max is another. I know there's six hops happen, but I'm not so far into that.
Okay.
Part of it, but it's that general
still,
picture.
Though, that's pretty amazing.
Now the problem is that for it's also the more the higher frequencies, the more they're impacted by geography in local signaling. So local signaling doesn't work very well in amateur radio. I have a friend in Ghent. And he has not been able to make any contacts in New York State.
Wow.
Really?
Oh, he's in a little hole.
No, he's not.
No?
Huh. So ham antennas are generally, the interest is in the fun and challenge of distant communications. Yeah. So if you're going to want to get bounces that go distances, then you want a shallow angle so that it's gone quite a ways before it gets to the ionosphere, it bounces back down equal angle and comes down again at a distance.
It's aimed at the sky, it's not aimed at your neighbors.
Well, really, it's aiming well, at your horizon.
It's more the horizon yeah. than the sky.
Yeah, you don't have
though
a
you're right.
Of
course it's sky, but right. it's the lower it's reaches sky. Of the yeah. sky. We call it a low angle of takeoff.
Okay.
So
but isn't that does but does that get in the way of the reflection? Is
no,
the reflection
saying it lands
coming
really
in
far
angle?
Away. It doesn't land locally.
Yeah. yeah, that's where the interest is.
Yeah, it really is this kind of a picture.
Okay.
And so this is called the skip zone because it skips over.
He's indicating all the spaces in between the sending and receiving points that can't hear the signal.
So his
oh, there are people on
wide,
radio right? instead of around the table. Sorry, folks.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
there are people who cannot see us.
Just making sure everybody has a visual in their head. This is just a conversation.
Imagine a billiard table, right? You bounce the ball off of the cushions to get to the far pocket. If you're at one corner, you want to bounce off the opposite cushion and get over to the other side. If you want to get in the center pocket, you're at an end pocket, you want to go in the middle between, so you want yeah. to go a quarter of the way down the length of the other side. If you want to get to the far pocket, you got to go out further, and of course you can't quite make it unless you put spin on it, because in the middle is the middle pocket. You can't bounce off of that. It's that kind of picture.
Yeah.
So if you're shooting, if you're in one far corner pocket and you want to get to the far pocket on your side, relatively speaking, or the ball that's in front of it, so you don't have to deal with that stuff. You're going to have to aim at a shallow angle to come close to the middle of the other side to get to the far side. The closer, the steeper your angle when you're shooting to the opposite cushion, the more direct you're coming to it, the more it's going to bounce right back to you.
And it's going to land closer.
Gotcha. So that's what we want to do for local.
Okay.
Right.
But the way the antennas are all set up, they're all set up for the far pocket.
Wow. So nobody gotcha. has a good one, a good local.
Oh, yeah. They're, it's just you, it's not common.
Not common.
And in fact, right, for the most part, nobody does.
God. So they have a better chance of bouncing to New York City and back again with another thing than hitting local.
Well, it won't bounce back to you. It'll bounce on to the Caribbean. Right?
So you would have
so they're also directional.
Special.
Yeah.
Now, what frequencies are those, the long range ones? Are those the lower frequencies?
These are the lower
they actually can be right. any of the frequencies will work that way. In fact, but the upper ones start to have attenuation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they die out before they get very far. Except okay. for unusual situations with tropospheric ducting,
yeah.
for instance, where they can catch into like a channel. In the atmosphere and run through that channel and come out way the heck over at some distance.
Weather-related, yeah.
Absolutely.
That sounds crazy.
There's also meteor
yeah.
bounce.
Yeah, I was just going to say meteor scatter.
Yeah, meteor scatter. There's moon bounce.
Mm-hmm.
They do that. The weak signal work was developed yeah. for especially for EME, Earth, Moon, Earth communications.
Wow.
Moon bounce. So, there is then, if you want to be local, then you need to be able to have a steep angle of transmission so that your bounce back is local.
Okay.
Yeah, you gotta go straight up.
Which means you need to be straight up.
Straight up.
Or, in our terms, near vertical.
Near vertical.
And then we're talking about the angle of incidence. That's the technical name for the angle of where it bounces or technically refracts.
Yeah.
So it's, and we're using, there is, the modes are ground wave, there are signals that are that kind of roll with the ground and then die out.
Some
sky
rain.
Wave is everything else.
Yeah.
And then we want nearly vertical incident sky wave, NVIS, near vertical incident sky wave. To speak, we usually say NIVIS to make it easier to say.
So that basically means local communications.
It's designed, the aim is for local communications. Local means typically 0 to 300, 350, even up to 500 miles radius.
How about modal antennas? When an emergency happens, launch a bunch of drones straight the hell up and aim at them from the placement.
Yeah.
Modal drone antennas.
Yep. Another possibility.
You just put Yankees up there.
Sorry, I just.
That'd be a well.
And your network will be up for about 20 minutes, and then the drone's battery dies.
But when you need it, it'll be up there.
Solar.
Or balloon.
Right. Like, right. They're building those.
You can make a drone with a nice big wingspan that doesn't have to have like a helicopter design, just a plane that circles forever with a solar panel.
Yep.
Oh wait, but you got an airport over there that might hit them.
Or you get to get above them. So, anyway, the two things are though. NIVIS is what's needed, and NIVIS is very low frequency.
Okay.
Because.
What frequencies? Like,
so typically it's 80 meters, which is 3.8 megahertz,
yep,
roughly. Then it, but right now we're at a really difficult time for amateur radio because of the low sunspot cycle, because
it's
the sun
up.
Is what ag. It's picking up very, 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 very slowly.
And it's having its fits, too. It's been slipping and going dormant.
Yep.
I do solar predictions in my weather.
Uh-huh, sure. Cool.
So, yeah, it's like...
You're up on that.
I just added a basic radio propagation prediction as well.
Cool.
Like, currently, it is 4. But over the past couple of nights, there were a lack of sunspots or extra sunspots. I'm not sure exactly what was happening, but the radio propagation was really good on the lower frequencies, temporarily, and then disappeared.
We ought to talk about that. That's very cool, because there are a few of those propagation elements that are important for NIVIS for knowing which band to use.
Okay.
And you can be reporting on those.
Okay,
so the
yeah.
one you're using is one of those, and you could let me know which one, and I have to go back. I don't have this stuff on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah.
But that's very cool. So what happens, though, is that with this relatively low activation of that layer, right now there are two frequency parameters that are involved with it. The ionosphere part that we are talking about with the bouncing is called the F layer, F1 and 2 layers, which are upper layers. They're the bouncy layers. Two steps below that is the D layer, which is an absorptive layer. It sucks up radio transmissions.
How do you make it through that?
You have to use a frequency that will make it through that.
Mm. And still bounce off of it.
And then you have to have
layer.
A frequency which is the frequency which will bounce. And both of those are variables.
Oh, God.
In particular, the D layer relates
based on current
to
conditions.
Current conditions.
Based on conditions, both the activation element, so to speak, of the F layer, and the strength of the D layer, which is activated by the sun.
Okay.
So the D layer is really soaky in the daylight.
So, okay, that is why the transmissions all die out during the
day
for a long way.
They just get soaked up.
The sun charges up the D layer and then it just
activates
eats
it. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Is there any frequencies that are really stable?
No.
So you got to dance it throughout
yeah.
the day.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
it's a serious dancing, too. Because, we had an emergency in the emergency group. Statewide, we have a monthly activation network testing, and we usually operate that through the repeater system. But once a month, we operate it through long wave, so to speak, typically on 80 meters. But the last time, and it's really because it's statewide, then it's a NIVIS operation, and antennas that are optimized for long distance will still have some vertical radiation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people are able to get on, particularly with the 80 meters, but the 80 meters were not reflecting. Are we being called to something?
Oh, you can just keep talking.
Okay.
I'm just checking.
So the 80 meters was going on through. It wasn't bouncing off the F layer. There wasn't enough charging activation of the F layer, so it had to go down to 160 meters. Antenna lengths correspond to the wavelength.
Yes.
Typically, we run quarter wave antennas is the smallest. A quarter wave dipole that has two quarter wave sections to it, so it's a half wavelength long. Well, on 160 meters, half is 80 meters,
right.
Which is 250 feet. It's a long antenna. You can, so I'm building right now a portable Nivis antenna system. And what
what's relative
like?
Portability?
Yeah.
When you
is relative.
Does it look like a drilling rig?
it's set up to carry in a bag.
Wow.
It's got three masts in pieces that go together that have to be guyed.
Okay.
And it's 130 feet long.
Whoa.
With the first section being the length, it's around 32 feet on each leg, being for the 40-meter band. And then you tie on, connect a piece, you just connect a jumper. When the thing's set up, it's set the whole length, but it's got sections.
Mm-hmm.
So the one is tuned to the 40-meter band.
When you want to jump.
The highest.
Bands.
And then you put a jumper on to add on the next length to get to 60 meters, which is the next band. And then a jumper to get to 75 meters, which is the low end of the 80-meter band. We call it 80-meter. That's the voice section of it. The CW section is up at 80 meters, so there's a little leg for that.
Is this so you can adjust it throughout the day? Or?
Yeah,
oh
at night.
Oh, my God.
But to do this is meant to be an inexpensive. The people who designed it wanted it to be that people could afford to build it,
yeah.
Put it up, and you're not like dialing through these changes, right? You're working for quite a while before you
right.
have to change
yeah.
it. So to go out and yet to have a very efficient antenna, because a tuned dipole is one of the more efficient, until you get up to directional stuff with Yagi's, as you mentioned. So, but, and then it has a coil, a loading coil, that goes on the end of the 40-meter section to load it up to be able to use it for 160 meters.
Wow.
But not
yeah.
have
this
the
is
great
all,
length.
This is all Nivis. This is a Nivis
it's
setup.
All for Nivis. So you start
wow.
off in the daytime with the 40 meters and then punching through the D layer, and then as the D layer starts to absorb more,
yeah, change it.
You go to the higher bands, and go through them progressively because you also have to be low enough to bounce off of the F layer.
Right.
So there's this dancing. Anyway, this obviously this is complex, right?
Yeah.
And you're talking a big antenna. It's not easy to put up. Who has that
you're
much
not,
yard space?
Yeah, you're not
yeah.
talking They're, about like a house-to-house communication system for, say, you know, people who are within.
So when
three,
I realized in talking to people that there was definitely a need in the full picture for Nivis, for instance, mm-hmm. but most of the people were not want to go there, nor do they need it. What they need to do is get to the more immediate neighbors.
Yeah, the more immediate emergency.
Yeah.
And so we have our repeaters as the one thing, but you want to be able to do it in these other situations I spoke about. So I began to looking into the non-licensed modes, mm-hmm. like Citizens Band. Actually, mm-hmm. I didn't look at that from the beginning because everybody knows that's old
everybody
stuff. There's a thing. FRS family radio system is the little things you get, the walkie-talkies
yeah.
that you get at Walmart, and they're only good for like a mile or a half a mile.
Yeah. Way out there in Hawthorne, your house might be a few miles from your neighbor.
And then it wouldn't work. So the next one is the GMRS, General Mobile Radio Service, and that has to be licensed, but there's no test. You just pay some money.
Is that for, like, cars? What was that made for?
It was made for general use, including
it's
mobile.
It's like CB, but with a license.
It is. It's
take Wyndham Mountain. They can license their own frequency so that all their own, like, ski crews
yes.
can have the same frequency.
Okay.
And you don't have to pass any tests.
Exactly.
Get it.
It's that kind of thing. And gotcha. There's an MURS, which is, there are more commercial systems, but some of the commercial people use the GMRS. But there are differences among these. The citizens band is 11 meters, 29 megahertz. So it's still in the upper ends of the high frequency bands. GMRS is 460 megahertz. Well, it means that a citizens band quarter wave antenna is 11 feet long.
Yeah.
GMRS quarter wave antenna is like 17 inch, 15 inches, something like that.
Okay, so you can
right?
carry it with you.
You can carry it easy on your car. If you have a half wave antenna that's more effective on your car or your house, it's still very doable.
Yeah.
At the same time, the GMRS is a little more sensitive to trees and hills and buildings. Citizens band works better around them.
Yeah.
Citizens band is limited to, I think, 12 watts, something like that. GMRS is limited to 50 watts.
Truckers back in the day didn't pay attention to this.
You're right. They didn't. Absolutely. They have, I talked to a guy, they had kilowatts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh, there we go. Power's going to go out here before long. Our power on sticks is going to fall right over.
So what
I got 10 minutes left to fill. So
what I realized was that it seemed to me what people really wanted was these non-licensed shorter range systems, but still within neighborhoods, for
yeah.
instance. But they needed to also be able to reach out further. So it seemed to me that what they wanted was a spoken hub system.
Yeah, intermodal
with hams. Who had the Nivus, but also had GMRS and Citizens
yeah.
Band radios at their stations so that they could be net control.
Yeah.
They could pass on, they could reach out what needed to be to reach beyond.
A real
yeah,
patchwork.
That's
and
the
so
missing piece is the networking of the various bands.
Exactly. And in fact, it just naturally is falling out in the people that have been. We're going to be doing this. I've had a call for another session. I'm going to be presenting live to a group who will gather to hear about this, and I'll bring some of the equipment to talk about it. But out of the people who expressed interest, initially the only word was ham, but now we realize local radio is what we mean.
Yeah.
Ham, by the way, is not an acronym. It's not capital H, capital A, capital M, despite the story circulating about that. It probably relates to ham-fisted CW operators.
Is Morse code, generally.
Thank you. Professional telegraph operators was the only way for communications before, as radio came along. Then the initial radio was only able to be in code in CW, stands for continuous wave, but actually you break it up with dits and dashes, SOS, people know that. But the early operators, amateur operators, to the professional telegraphers, they were ham-fisted.
Yeah,
they weren't very
right.
good at it. So anyway, pet peeve, I see capital H, capital A, cam. It's like screaming at people, right?
Ah.
Anyway, aside.
Of course, yeah.
Out of this group, it really turns out that there are people who are interested in ham radio.
Yeah.
Okay. Most of them are more interested in local
yeah.
communications in times of need.
Mm.
So it falls out that it's a pretty good ratio, right? You get plenty of people, so we can work on, with the different characteristics and different kinds of radios, we can work on finding what system is the best fit for some people. Now, I have to say that after I did a 2-hour presentation with this to people, some of them came away saying, Well, of course, the TMI, too much information, was one part. But the other part was, wow, this sounds too complicated. I can't possibly do anything with it. And I had to say, well, let's back up a little bit. All you actually need is a radio that sits on your desk, a piece of cable that goes out to an antenna, or you could go out and stand with it, but you'd like to have an antenna, which is a simple stick which you can build for $5 or you can buy for $50.
The complicated part happens on the other guy's end.
That they can mash with
well,
their
it's
hand.
Not. If when you go to the Nivis guy, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the complicated part, but talking to your neighbor, that's not as complicated as it might seem.
Right. That's very interesting because, again, that missing piece is all the operators, they know each other, and then in the emergency situation, then all that inter-frequency communication gets parsed and sent forward. Like, oh, we got a 911 here. Boom. People know about it.
You know, it's really, what you just mentioned is a really important aspect of it. If this is to be real in the way people would want it, then you would need to actually develop that network amongst friends, but not simply, and run your scenarios regularly, because it has to do with how do you reach one another when their frequencies all over the place.
Yeah.
So those systems, though, these more public ones, non-licensed, I'm calling them, are channelized because they've got to limit interference.
Yeah.
They're limited in power and limited in antenna in order to limit the reach, but that you need to know where to go.
Yeah.
And on the ham bands, it's not channelized. You got the whole world of frequencies to find, so you've got
to
have agreements about where to find one another. And then with Nivis,
you've got to find information in the
and
noise.
Because the ham bands are wide open public, you talk about stepping on somebody on the repeater, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
Even unintentionally.
Yes.
Because you can be stepped on by somebody who's running a kilowatt with a Yagi who's talking to somebody over there and you're in between.
Yep.
Like
and you don't know it, and only one guy will hear
right,
it.
That's right.
Somebody in Cleveland is stepping on somebody in Maine.
That's right. It happened. And so you've got to have a protocol.
That happens with FM radio, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You've got to have a protocol of moving to other frequencies.
Yes.
So it
pre-established so that you can maintain communication smoothly without having to add more communication. All right, what signal are you jumping to now?
Yeah. So GMRS is channelized?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually a whole weird set of various sets of channels because it shares it with the FRS system, which is super low power.
Mm-hmm.
The FRS also, you're not allowed to have a detachable antenna. So they got these little stubs, and that's so they prevent interference. So you can use it.
Yeah.
A bunch of people can use it in a small space with different channels, but also people just a little ways away from you aren't interfering with you, but they're also extremely low power. GMRS, you can have a separate antenna.
That's
you have a little more 50 power.
Watts, right?
50 watts with GMRS.
Interesting. But to get
that's a nice neighborhood coverage.
Yeah.
You go the whole world with that. That's above the low power fun stuff in amateur radio. Limits it at 5 watts.
And people
reach the whole world. catching the right bounce and looking for the right conditions. But we want something that's a little more reliable than...
So that's your next presentation, is how to get the network talking to each other. And
well, it will actually be the whole thing, and it will simply... I'm also, I could say, I call this, just came to mind... Community Response Radio.
Yeah.
That's my own name. And I put together a Groups IO group. So it's groups.io/g/community-response-radio. And I'm paying for the upgrade so that I can host files on it. They did that trick last January. And what I'm putting together is useful documentation, all this stuff. On Nivis, on the different modes, GMRS, CB, I'm putting together antenna selection help, radio selection help. There are things on licensing classes for the ham side, because I'm doing things in emergency communication for the hams on Nivis. and some links to groups in other places where they actually live with emergencies. In California, Northern California, where my kids live, they've got serious, you know, they've gone through earthquakes that just took down everything. They've gone down through the fires.
We're
so they're big.
Is there any last minute thing you want to say to anybody that's listening right now? Any contact information?
Give us the link again.
So I would say that one link that's developing slowly, but it's happening, and it would be amping up quickly in the next week or two, is groups.io/g/community-response-radio. And you can reach me through that with any other questions. Through this group right here can reach me if you're interested in any of these presentations.